Kamenetsky Brothers, Land O'Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, co-host of the Land O'Lakers blog. And Andy, I know things are looking down for Laker fans. You may have heard they were eliminated by the Spurs in the first round of the playoffs. You saw those games.
In the minimum, by the way, amount of games required.
Which is
unfortunate. Four games are the minimum. Four is how long they lasted. And I'd say they put up the equivalent fight of about a game and a half.
They were really eliminated after two. The rules made them play.
Well, the problem is they had too many players eliminated.
Right.
By game three, half the roster had actually been eliminated.
Yeah, you really wish the games three and four could have been done with a running clock. But again, the rules don't permit that sort of thing. But, you know, as down as Laker fans are, and Kobe's hurt, and there's so much uncertainty, and all these other things, you have
it's
to
looking
remember.
Looking like Ebanks is not going to be re-signed.
For example, you have to remember, it can always be worse. You could be a fan of the Philadelphia 76ers who spent this week, they've already done their exit interviews, watching Andrew Bynum flamenco dance. So, I mean,
in Madrid.
Yes. Your center, who did not play a minute of basketball this season, cost you Andre Iguodala,
Mo Harkless, Vucevic.
Yeah, all those
guys. A draft
guys.
Pick, I believe.
Yeah. He's in Madrid flamenco dancing. Because YOLO.
In, by the way, a Ferrari leather jacket. Still got the braids. He actually, you could tell that he was being respectful towards another country and culture. Hair was tightly braided. Nothing, you know, nothing too over the top. He's a guest. He's a guest in Spain.
I actually think Bynum is so YOLO at this point. He's taken it such to the extreme that he doesn't even think you get to live once. I think he thinks you get to live like half of once. So you got to cram it all in because you just don't know.
With Steven Jackson now out of the league, and I could very well see that waving of him by San Antonio being his last stop because there aren't too many teams who really think
well, before he goes into broadcasting. The
God,
fifth guy on the TNT panel.
God,
that would be
happen.
Awesome. God, just add another 4 or 5 feet right next to Shaq and let Steven Jackson
let
in there. Captain
the
Jack.
Trill
there you
stack
go.
Five. But I mean, with Steven Jackson, I'm guessing now done. There is not a player in the league who gives negative fucks more than Andrew Bynum. He does not care what fans think. He does not care what potential employers think.
No.
He does not care what current employers think. He doesn't even necessarily care about what the people of Madrid think.
And it's sort of
he just doesn't care.
It's like, you know, a bunch of years ago when he had the Playboy bunny on his shoulders, whatever. Granted, he did hurt himself bowling. So, I mean, you can't say this for sure. You know, you go and you watch the clip of him flamenco dancing. A, he's not bad. B,
he's always had great footwork.
He does have
Brian.
Great feet. And, you know, it's not that he's really like doing anything dangerous, but it is.
He didn't do the splits. He didn't do like, in Travolta and Saturday Night Fever when he does those deep knee bends in the solo
dance. But it
that is, Sixers fans should
such,
be irate over if
it
he was
it
doing
is
that.
It is such a middle finger to everyone. Like, man, I know you guys suffered this season, but check out my summer vacation. It's like he went to Philadelphia and showed them a slideshow.
Come on, guys,
sit down. Let's see what we did.
As I tweeted out yesterday, I love Andrew Bynum conceptually. I want him to be in the league forever. Not in a million years would I want him on my team if I actually cared about my team.
This is like when people, like, there was a reason the Lakers, not just that they wanted Dwight Howard, they didn't want Andrew Bynum. They did not want to be the guy who had to pay Andrew Bynum
to flamenco dance. What's crazy, too, this is how uncertain things are right now and how much Dwight Howard did not win over Laker fans, at least entirely wholeheartedly, his first season here. We've had people on Twitter, at Cam Brothers, ask us, if Dwight walks, would you consider bringing Andrew Bynum back?
No, I would not.
No, what about short-term deal?
No, I don't need
to know the details.
No. But beyond the fact that it's like literally, it's like an impossibility, you know, from a financial standpoint. If he would sign for maybe a dollar, I would do it. But, you know,
no, veterans,
the answer is no.
I don't want Andrew Bynum playing for his next contract.
No.
But I want him, I desperately want him to be somebody else's problem.
Oh, and he will be.
I
give it time.
I want that to happen.
The next flamenco dance Andrew Bynum does will be when he signs a 4-year contract for $60 million. So just remember, Laker fans, it can always be worse.
YOLO.
Really interesting week, Andy, I thought this week in El Segundo with exit interviews. I know we're like some, like they're like a tiny sliver of the media who actually finds exit interviews fascinating.
It's you and me. But we love them.
It was good content this week. A lot of very interesting stuff. And I thought one of the, and we're going to got all summer to talk about this, and summer's going to last a little longer than any of us hoped.
It's the opposite of Goodfellas. Remember when De Niro goes, it's going to be a good summer after they pull off Lufthansa? This is not going to feel like that kind of summer.
It's the other side. Kobe, I thought Kobe's comments, Kobe, who was spectacular in his exit interview, as you might suspect at this point.
He gives good exit interview, generally speaking.
He said a lot of stuff. He talked about Powell. He talked about Mike D'Antoni and all these other things. But I thought the most provocative thing that he said was the way in which he lobbied to keep the band together for one more year. You may have seen what happened. You know, the drummer got arrested four or five times. The guitar player OD'd. There were sex scandals. There were all kinds of things with the band. In the last like five stops, and the tour had to be canceled because they trashed too many hotel rooms. But they still want to go out on tour again. That's what Kobe wants with this group. And a lot of people were like, Kobe, you crazy.
Did they say it exactly like that, Brian?
They might have.
They said, Kobe, you crazy.
You can't bring this. You cannot expect to bring this group back again. And Kobe said, I think they can win a championship. I absolutely believe that if you bring this group back as constructed, whatever, the core four, with some supplements,
well,
a little
Kobe
more
doesn't still entirely believe they've been eliminated. I mean, that's how much he believes.
He believes he's going to be using his scooter to get to
is great too.
Round.
For people who don't know, Kobe's actually been getting around his house when not on crutches, using a scooter.
A little scooter, like
and
a rascal.
I keep picturing him like as an old man in a cafeteria scooting around, or like that episode of Seinfeld where George is faking being handicapped
just so
and
he can use one.
They give him a scooter. I keep picturing Kobe that way, and I feel bad for his injury. That's funny.
Yeah, the Kobe's justification, I'll read you his quote. When you go through a season like this and you're five games out of the playoffs and all of a sudden you have this incredible run, referring to the 28-12 and the great April and all that kind of stuff. But you end up with not just in the playoffs, but with the seventh seed coming from where we came from. It does something to the character of your group. It builds togetherness and an understanding. There's no more confusion about how I should play with Dwight or how Dwight should play with Powell, all this other stuff. It's not there anymore. So to allow all that to dissipate and to have to do that again with another group, it's a headache. Basically making a lobbying for an attempt to try to get the kind of continuity that they didn't have
this
year.
And you and I, by the way, are both big believers in continuity.
Yes. Yeah, I know the record for for them when they played together, when the big four, the presumed starting lineup was together, was terrible. But the sample sizes are so small, and they never got to practice, and they didn't have a training camp, and they didn't have all this other stuff, and it was so disjointed and herky-jerky throughout the year.
And there were so many other things going on, not the least of which is Dr. Buss's death.
Right.
I mean, this was a bizarre year, and in a lot of ways, it's a very difficult year to truly judge much of anything good or bad.
Right. So here's the question. Is he right? Is the best path for the Lakers to take this offseason one where they basically say, you know what? When we signed up for this experiment, we thought we had a two-year window. Year one, the window either didn't open or it shattered, depending on what metaphor you want to use. Do we want to try again? Do we just say, you know what? We signed up for 2 years. Let's use the second year and see what happens. Or do they try to revamp it?
I think the answer is yes and no. I think Kobe is correct that in terms of the best route, I think, towards winning a championship, he's probably right that continuity is the best way to go, because very, very rare is a team like the Boston Celtics that gets reassembled in one offseason and wins a title that year. And I think that's very much because, in very large part, because you rarely get three key pieces.
It's hard,
Rondo
to put together a roster. It's what the Lakers thought they had
year. But I was going to say, forget putting them all in and making it work. It's very rare to get the pieces they had that so naturally complement each other. Mm-hmm. Like the way Pierce, Garnett, and Rondo and Allen were going to play together on paper was obvious. You know, whether or not everybody could make it work in the locker room and, you know, with their egos and stuff was a different story, and whether Doc Rivers, who at the time certainly didn't have the cachet that he has now,
right,
whether he could handle it, separate issue, but you look at the four of them, and really at the time it was the three of them, and you say their skill sets are perfect. Right.
Whereas
together.
With the Lakers this year, where everyone were like, well, how is that going to work? How is Kobe going to work with Nash?
Right. And if
but you,
you
just figured
over,
the sheer level of talent was
right.
going to be enough.
If you
to
start
get
over again, more likely than not, you're going to end up dealing with a situation where there's more question marks. So in that sense, Kobe's right. But where I think he may be wrong is I don't know if I really look at this team and say, I think they have a strong chance of winning a title if everybody's healthy. I don't know if I'd say I think that they have a strong chance because everybody's going to get older. I think health is going to be a relative term for a lot of these guys. You have no idea, despite Kobe's confidence, what he's going to look like next season. You're going to have a lot of guys.
And
he talked
this week about being ready for the beginning of training camp, why he thinks he'll be ready
sure.
to go at the beginning of
and
the season.
And I hope he's right.
And
I
all these other
right.
things.
You know, but you know that I'm skeptical.
Yes. Yes, I do know. Because you've said things like, I'm skeptical.
Oh, and I didn't just do it out
no,
of nowhere.
No, you've been like this for a while. Since the injury came, you've been very skeptical.
I've looked up a lot of numbers. Right. You know. But if I'm the front office, if I'm not really, truly confident that this team has a strong chance of winning a title, not can they do it? Because you can rationalize just about anything. But if you don't look at them and say, I really think they have a strong chance of being in the mix, the temptation has to be there to just say, you know what? If I'm not going to win a title, I'd rather not pay like an $80 million tax hit. If I'm not going to win a title either way, we're better off starting the stripping down process that we know is going to happen in another year regardless.
Right. Save yourself a little bit. There's only so much, assuming they want to re-sign Howard, there's sort of only so much they could strip down this year, but they could move Powell or, you know, amnesty Powell and do something else with them. There are ways that they could pare down the payroll. There's no question to make themselves less competitive. I think, make this point real quick. I think if you look at it, there are a couple things you have to decide. First of all, was this year with injuries a freaky kind of thing, or was it a sign of what's coming? Dwight, I think, will be healthier next year. There's no reason to believe that he's not going to, you know, have an off season to truly get healthy and get fit, which for him is a huge deal, and all that. I think he's going to look great next year. I have no problem with that, and I'm working under the assumption that he's staying. Currently working under that assumption. Kobe is obviously a wild card. Gasol. Again, he was kind of out of shape when he came into camp because he rested off the Olympics. I don't think he's going to have those kinds of obligations.
And he had lingering health issues
right.
on top of the
so
conditioning.
So if Powell can come back and be and start the year in good shape and healthy, is he going to have, you know, as
he's
deep,
certainly not going to play any offseason basketball.
Right. Is he going to have as deep of health issues as he had this year? Is he going to miss 10 games, 12 games next year? Probably. But is he going to miss 30? That's a different question. Is Nash was very durable up until this year, over the last 6 or 7 years, but he's got nerve pain and he's 39 years old. Is that something that is now kind of the beginning of the end?
Meta World Peace has been getting steadily less healthy
right.
each season.
And so, you know, it depends.
Steve Blake has been extremely injury prone.
Do you think that this year was, to some degree, they're going to get injuries next year, whatever, but this year was over the top in terms of not just the amount, but the length and the way they were staggered and all these other things. If you think this was a little fluky, then you're probably all right bringing it back. But, you know, so that's the first consideration. The second one is how, you know, what else can you kind of do? If you don't want to strip it down, you want to try to make it through. I don't know what else you can do. And you look at it this year, Oklahoma City, maybe let's say the Lakers were 3 or 4 seed. Blake Griffin gets hurt. Westbrook's hurt. You know, all this. The Western Conference is 100 times more open now than it was earlier, you know, 5 weeks ago. So if this team stayed relatively healthy and they were like even a 3 or a 4 seed and played pretty well, you know, something along the lines of that 28-12 where they were a little more legitimate than I thought those numbers were, you could go into the playoffs and be like, wow, all of a sudden, you know what, we catch a break here and there, we actually could get to the finals.
Yeah, but the problem, and I don't disagree with what you're saying, but the problem is to get to that point where you're making that rationalization, the season has to go so far opposite of what happened.
Right. I mean, it assumes Kobe is back and playing well by midseason and all these
middle,
other things.
Put it this way, if you hit the middle ground of what happened this year, entering the playoffs, they still, I don't think, are a given, if nothing else, to beat some of those teams.
That's true. But they'll tell you, you know, but they'll point out you know, again, go by sort of the devil's advocate party line here, that they, you know, even when they were winning games, and again, I don't want to say playing well because I spent a lot of time talking about how they really weren't, but they were winning games. They were doing it still while people were injured. They never had the whole lineup there.
That is true.
I think to some degree it gets to what should the priorities be this summer? Like what are the two, if you had to pick two things that are the major priorities, what would you say they are?
Well, number one is figuring out what happens with Dwight Howard.
And we're going to talk. We're going to talk a ton about Dwight Howard, so we don't have to get over the course of the next few weeks. Well, so we don't have to go give like.
We doubt he's going to make a decision by the end of this podcast.
We're going to have time.
The nutshell version is: if I feel like he wants to be here, then definitely. If I'm not sure. If I had to guess, the answer is probably still yes, but I'd be a lot more cautious.
He is a must sign. You must sign Dwight Howard. I feel that very strongly. And what's the second priority? Because I think we probably agree on this. Without having actually discussed it, I think we both probably agree.
To me, the second priority is figuring out just how good you think this team is.
Okay, then we don't. I was wrong.
I think you have to figure out how good you really think they're going to be, because every move you make from there hinges on that real come to Jesus moment in terms of evaluating the roster.
Okay, you sort of talked about that before. I would say the second major priority is everything that you do this summer as a front office has to be done with the idea of keeping as pristine as possible next summer when they have nothing on the books.
Sure, that to me is a given either way.
Okay, well then
that to me is an absolute given unless they get the opportunity to like sign, trade over and then extend LeBron, which in that case
just go ahead and do it, figure it out.
Absolutely do it.
But my point being,
he's LeBron, but we've got a lot of cap space coming.
And this kind of gets to the point that you were making before, Andy, I think, is that if you don't think, even if you don't think you're necessarily going to win a title, but you want to give it an honest effort, you're charging people $1 zillion for tickets, it's Kobe's last season, and so on and so on. You don't want to strip down the team in the same summer you're trying to re-sign Dwight Howard, whatever the reason. It's probably harder to build a contending team for next year that's better than the one that you could theoretically have that doesn't use up a lot of your flexibility summer.
I mean, it's like I said early on. Kobe is correct, I would say, in terms of your best chance. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a realistic chance, that's not the same thing as best chance.
Yeah. I think that's probably what they're going to do. I think, Dwight, they're kind of probably in a holding pattern until they figure out what's going on with Dwight. And that could be, you're circling the airport for a while on that one. But they have, as Mitch points out, we don't even have a full mid-level exception.
He will remind you all the time.
We have a limited number
money.
Of exceptions and ways that we can sign players.
New CBA, the way it works.
We have a mini mid-level, which is not worth the full mid-level.
Not worth the full. We know, Mitch. It's right. A mini.
They can sign veterans minimum guys, and they have the 48th pick in the draft. Typically
which,
not a place where
which
you
find.
Which
for us is pretty high lately. Right,
not a place where you find starting caliber players. And we'll probably sell them anyway. You can trade Powell, but if you trade Powell, you'd probably have to construct something where you get, a big expiring deal back, maybe one young player that isn't going to cost much, a $2 or $3 million guy that you like, and a draft pick. You won't be better next year, but that won't screw you up the year after.
And here's the thing.
There's only so many ways
needle. If you can say that kind of deal comes up and you can save a little bit of money, say you're taking back like about $16 million, sending out $19 million, and you gain a little bit of depth.
$12 million of it is off your books at the end of the year.
And you think that this team won't be considerably worse than without Powell. Let's say you say, all right, on paper we're not as good, but I don't think the drop-off is that harsh, then you have to consider
it. Because you're better off for the year following.
Some depth.
Right, they have younger.
They're going to lose
They have younger players that they wouldn't have otherwise had. Right. Right, and they're not going to. If you want Pau Gasol, if you happen to be an NBA GM listening to this podcast, and I'm sure most of you are, at least some of you, 30 of you, if you call the Lakers
We're Facebook friends, or at least I am. I can't speak for you. I am Facebook friends with Daryl Morey. So there's one guy that may be listening.
Send him this.
I will.
If you call about
Powell, used to be Hot for Powell,
they'll answer.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that a Van Halen song?
Hot for Powell.
I think it was. Very different video than the Hot for Teacher video.
Ew.
Ew. You talk about flamenco dancing.
That gets very. That takes the whole Black Swan. I mean, ballerina dancing.
Wow.
The podcast got weird.
Very blue, if nothing else. The direction that the franchise goes, obviously a major topic of conversation this summer. The other one is who's going to be the coach next year. Everyone, Steve Nash did it, and most importantly, again, Kobe Bryant threw his support behind Mike D'Antoni, quote, he made a lot of adjustments. He was asked directly, do you think Mike D'Antoni is the right coach for this team? I think so. He's made a lot of adjustments. I think at the start it was tough because he had his way that he wanted to play and kind of wanted to stick to that a little bit. And it took a little while and so on and so on and so on. But once he finally, you know, decided to relent a little bit and bring Powell along with us, which he finally decided to do. And since we've done that, we've had absolutely no issues.
He's correct. He did leave out the part about how they all wanted to play the way they wanted to as well. But he's right. D'Antoni was very stubborn. He was very stubborn in the beginning, and to his credit, eventually did relent. Right. You can argue that what he relented on was obvious, if you want to say that, but either way, he did it.
Yeah, it was interesting when D'Antoni talked about that at his exit interview. Said basically, like, look, when you're hired to do a job, you're hired for a certain reason. You're hired because of his style, which the Lakers made no bones about. You're hired to play in a certain way because they expect you to do a certain thing, and I tried to do it. And, you know, obviously he didn't have the guy who was supposed to make it work. So he was like, well,
Steve Nash was out longer than they expected.
Right. And when he kept saying, well, when we get Steve back, he's like, when we get Steve back, all these things that I'm trying to do will make sense.
Not even sure if they had known how long Nash was going to be out. I'm not 100% sure they would have brought in D'Antoni.
I think they would have only because you know, my theory about how Mike D'Antoni was hired.
Yeah. Okay.
They were worried that Phil would say yes. And so they just put everybody they could find on speed dial, and D'Antoni answered.
Which is pretty impressive because he was whacked out on
painkillers. Well, that's why he was up. He probably thought he was being pranked. Do you buy it when Kobe says, yeah, you know, Mike D'Antoni is the coach for this team? He's a guy who can lead us to a title next year if we bring back the core four.
I think so. I buy Kobe. I'd say about 75-ish%, 60% in the sense that I think Kobe believes that the roster is more important in terms of that championship puzzle than the coach.
Which in big picture terms is always true.
Sure, absolutely. So I believe Kobe's sincerity in that he thinks that if you give him the roster that he's picturing with Mike D'Antoni, they could win a title. And I also think Kobe's being sincere in the sense that he doesn't really listen to what the coach says anyway, so the hell does he care who's coaching?
Yeah, you know, I think you'd be less cynical as a fan.
They're bringing back Coach Vino. That's right. all he really cares about.
You'd buy it more if he hadn't said the similar things last year about Mike Brown. And he did. He was very supportive publicly of Mike Brown and I know this for a fact, he had reservations about him. But he was publicly did right by Mike Brown, which is what he absolutely should have done. Mike D'Antoni, by the way, we read this on Thursday afternoon, bought a house in Manhattan Beach. So he's clearly pretty comfortable that he's not going anywhere.
Or he's going into business to flip houses.
Right. Or he just says, you know what? It's nice here. I'm rich. Why? Even if I get booted to the curb, I can still afford a house in Manhattan Beach.
Not to mention, too, if he gets fired, they're going to owe him a lot of money, and he's going to have a lot of time to sit around in that house.
Right. Plus, where is Dan D'Antoni going to stay? So,
hey, bro, got a crash.
You know, it's a reality show. That Dan D'Antoni is Mike D'Antoni's house, like house boy of some sort.
By the way, and you know, we could picture this as a scenario to go through. Mike D'Antoni's the older one, correct?
I believe so, yes.
So in this scenario, I am older than you.
Yes.
How do you think you would handle, in the case of like Dan D'Antoni, Mike D'Antoni, if I was that much more staggeringly rich than you?
Oh, I don't think I would like that at all. I wouldn't like that.
Because Mike D'Antoni is so much
richer. Dan D'Antoni is...
He's living comfortably.
Rich by most sure. people's standards.
Well, you say,
he's a rich guy. I mean, you make a few $100,000 a year at least. Right. Probably, he's probably, you know, was clearing $500,000 at least back in Phoenix and all that other stuff.
Oh, no.
Dan D'Antoni's a rich man.
He is absolutely comfortable, but he ain't Mike D'Antoni.
Is super rich. He's ultra wealthy. I wouldn't like that at all. I would have no problem with me being richer than you.
Would you be outwardly resentful towards me, Brian?
Yes, I would.
Do you think, then let me ask you this, taking it a step further. How do you think you would handle being that much, relatively speaking, poorer than me while working under me?
I wouldn't like that either. No, I wouldn't like that at all. I don't want you to have things like that I don't have.
The two of them.
I want stuff, Andy.
So you're saying that the bond between the D'Antoni brothers is stronger than the bond between us?
Likely. Yeah, no. I have, again, no problem with me being far richer than you or employing you. But no, I don't think
it's
I could. I don't think I could. That arrangement doesn't work for me.
God bless him for making it work.
You know, honesty is the best policy. But do you agree with Kobe? I mean, there is some logic to what he's saying. If you have the same, if you're looking for continuity in the roster, it doesn't make sense to then fire the coach, bring back another guy, decide who it's going to be, then new staff, new system, and all these other things. It would be, by the way, the fifth system that they would have in 4 years because you have Phil, Mike Brown 1.0, Mike Brown 2.0, which is the Princeton, didn't last very long, and then D'Antoni. And you could even say D'Antoni 2.0 if you wanted to extend it further.
Well, then there's a six because Bernie.
Right, Bernie, the absence of system is still a system. So you're talking about like the six.
Seven, because then you get into Coach Vino. Right. He was telling him to run.
Eight, if you count what he was telling him to run while Mike Brown was still the coach. That's a lot of stuff.
there's just a reason these guys haven't gelled.
They're very confused.
Plus, you know, both Mike Brown and Mike D'Antoni had huge staffs, and you know, occasionally they were giving contradictory
Mike Brown,
advice and information.
Because we got this because it was you. The news came out again Thursday that somebody like Nate McMillan, who has worked with D'Antoni on like Team USA and all that, he wants a guy like that as his defensive coach. We got to tweet it at Cam Brothers. Geez, how many rows of coaches does he need? It should be noted that Mike D'Antoni brought only one coach with him, and that was Dan. The rest of those guys, all of them, belong to Mike Brown.
How many assistant coaches did it take to screw in a light bulb?
Basically. And Mike D'Antoni's staff, as I've been told, will not be as big next season. But anyway, yeah, there's a logic to that. You can't keep turning things over and over and over again. So would you
especially
bring it
from
back?
Kobe's perspective, right. When you know you
maybe
are on
one year, two at the most.
Again, Kobe's logic is absolutely sound. Whether or not Mike D'Antoni can lead this group, I think a lot of it depends on his flexibility and his openness. If he is more flexible the way he was in the last couple of months. And there's more continuity in terms of, you know, just guys staying healthy.
Right. And they all said, in terms of the system and whatever, what they do, they all said the right stuff this week at exit interviews.
When Mike D'Antoni has worked under good circumstances like he had in Phoenix, his teams have had a lot of success. And his teams have also had a lot, particularly in Phoenix, of shitty luck in the playoffs.
True.
In 2007, his team went through some shit-ass luck. 2005, he had a lot of injuries. 2006, he got him pretty far, despite the fact they didn't have Amari. Then Rajah Bell got hurt. So, yeah, I think assuming the team actually works together, like the players fit together and they stay healthy, if nothing else, I don't see D'Antoni getting in the way of success.
So we'll see what goes on there. I really don't think D'Antoni's going anywhere, but we'll find out, much to the chagrin, by the way, of all Laker fans. Finally, Andy. At least once again, let's go back to what we said at the beginning. It can always be worse. The New York Knickerbockers are still playing. That's good. But man alive, are they stupid. Like, you have a team that has a chance to really get as far as the Eastern Conference Finals, and they're doing dumb stuff.
Dumb things that, by the way, began with J.R. Smith and his suspension.
Right. What do you make of the black suits before game five? Because you know why? We're wearing black suits to game five because it's going to be Boston's funeral.
Well, the first question I would ask
is the least creative use of clothing I've ever heard in my entire life.
First question I would ask is, why are you going to the funeral of the, you know, metaphorical person that you killed? I mean, that's gauche.
It's just so
stupid. Bad manners.
I mean, it's such a, and apparently it was like a Kmart generated idea. Kenyon Martin came up with this,
as opposed to Kmart. They didn't buy the clothes from Kmart. They didn't get a deal on black clothes.
That is, I mean, that is such a pseudo weird badass gangster type, whatever. We're going to wear suits to your funeral before it even happens. By the way, it should be noted, they lost the game.
I'm too karmaphobic for that. You know, I would never do something like that. I'd maybe wear black clothes afterwards because you only have to beat the Celtics one time in the series, and for them it's done. And I would openly declare these are black clothes just for this series, not for the next series. But yeah, it's dumb. Win first.
It reminds me a little bit of when the Heat kind of, you know, LeBron and Wade and those guys were making fun of Dirk and his illness during the finals a couple years ago, and then Dirk came back and just torched him. Except it's like 5 times, 10 times, 15 times worse because this is much more calculated.
Right. They were just spontaneously goofing around and
they
should have
done it,
and
it was stupid. Like, this is just so stupid and shows that the Eastern Conference is going to be such a cakewalk for the Heat, because if the Knicks are willing to do this, and I'm like waving my hand disapprovingly at the article on my computer, they're going to get killed. Miami is going to kill them in a series. They're going to get destroyed by the Heat if they make it that far.
The Knicks, I like to say, have a lot of strong personalities on their roster. And it's not hard to believe that a roster that includes Melo, Kmart, J.R. Smith, Ray Felton, Jason Kidd, had, you know, still the stench of Rasheed Wallace on it, that they would come up with shenanigans like these. It is not surprising. But what is working in their favor, Brian, is that the Celtics have Jordan Crawford.
Yeah, and Jordan Crawford set a new level of stupidity, in trash talking when he basically, in a conversation with Carmelo Anthony at the end of
after the game,
implied, referencing earlier comments from Kevin Garnett, who also implied that he had had a relationship, a dalliance, with Lala Vasquez, Carmelo Anthony's wife. There's a cereal reference in there.
Honey Nut Cheerios. She tastes like it.
General Mills.
She tastes like it, by the way, Brian, down there. I don't think he meant
kiss. Not like right after breakfast.
Right, they didn't kiss. You know, he didn't lick her skin. He meant in her most intimate place.
In an intimate place. In her nether parts.
That's what he was talking about.
People are like, come on, you're off ESPN now. You can say the words. Well, I'm actually not sure we can say this. So Jordan Crawford.
That's how foul this was. We still have to be careful. And we're the only people monitoring
us. The FCC literally doesn't know we exist. It's like, you know, God is watching. We have to be careful.
Your wife tastes like Honey Nut Cheerios. First of all, for creativity, that's boss.
That is next level trash talk.
That's phenomenal.
But Jordan Crawford then smack talks at the end of this game to Melo, who has played horribly for the last two games, like 8 of 24 the other night, 10 of 35 the night before, or whatever it was, that KG shtooped his wife. You know, it's not even anything he did. It's not like, you know what? She also tastes like, you know, Chex Mix.
According
like
to the lip readers out there, you know, all the lip readers on Twitter and in the blogosphere and stuff, we have decided collectively that he said, that motherfucker fucked your wife.
So he's not even trash-talking something he did. It's like, look at what our guy did.
And in the meantime, you've got Chris Wilcox and DJ White pulling Crawford away, clearly annoyed by Crawford.
Right,
dude,
because
shut up.
He doesn't even play.
Right.
He's been on the Celtics for like 2 hours. He's sucked since he got there.
Not only
doesn't
he play, they've actually gotten better the less he's played.
Right, because he's not very good.
Right. He didn't play in this game, and he's shit-talking.
Yeah, and so, any momentum that the Celtics may have gained from the stupidity of the Knicks was probably handed right back to them because of the stupidity of Jordan Crawford. So it just goes to show, act like you've been there. All right. Plenty more coming up in the next few weeks. We'll get deep into Dwight Howard and what his plans are or aren't, or if he even knows what they might be. Lots to talk about the roster and free agency and the finals and when that comes around, and plenty of time to do it. Andy, anything else you can think of?
No, I'm good.
All right. We'll see everybody next time.